Well, good morning. I'm going to be talking about a difficult subject today. I guess I should at least say hello and glad to see you here. Joe offered me this opportunity by taking the day off. And so I get to share some thoughts with you that have been heavy on my mind for a while. And thoughts that I believe are explained, and a good answer, a good explanation for what we should do with them are found within the scriptures. What I basically want to talk to you about is money. Integrity with wealth. I want to look at God's perspective on that and kind of contrast it to what we see in our culture, in the world around us, and then in us, in ourselves, in our own opinions. I think right now we live in a time where there's a lot of mixed opinions about wealth, about money, about how it should be treated. It seems that a lot of people really don't have much regard for it. They don't have much regard for other people's money. They borrow and don't see any sense of obligation to pay back. Some people actually borrow and plan not to pay it back. There's just an overall disregard for ownership and people spending their own wealth to lend to other people. And you look at identity theft out there, and people are willing to dig into each other's pocketbooks and call it something other than theft so they can deal with it. So I want to look at what the scriptures have to say about that whole concept. I think right now, as you look at our culture on a whole, that we live in an irresponsible culture. We live in a culture where money comes and goes and people spend and don't think much of it. A few statistics from the Federal Reserve report. Consumer debt is at $11.2 trillion. And that means that's the debt that individuals own. That is houses, credit cards, cars, loans, basically, outstanding debt that individuals in this country owe to someone else. $909 billion of that is delinquent. In other words, they're not keeping the agreement that they made with somebody. In other words, they have somebody's money illegally. They're not paying it back like they said they would. They've violated their word. They've compromised their integrity with regards to what they said they would do. $678 billion of that is over 90 days, which is what creditors call seriously delinquent. In other words, people that may not even plan on paying it back, people that have no intention, probably going to try to run from it and just get away from it. National debt. This is what our government spends. $17 trillion. And it's increased by $2.6 billion daily since September 2012. Now, just as we try to get our brain wrapped around these figures, it's almost incomprehensible. And as such, I think we tend to look at the problem as something that we can't address. We can't approach it. It's just too big. Why even talk about it? It's easier to just ignore it and push it off to the side. And just in case you need a little bit of mathematical explanation for the size of those numbers, that's what a trillion looks like, and that's what a billion looks like. 12 zeros, 9 zeros, big numbers, bigger than we'll ever have in our account. But I think overall it demonstrates that our culture just has a laissez-faire, lackadaisical approach towards paying back debt. The problem with that is that anytime there is a movement in a direction, anytime there's a stampede, there's a chance that good people are going to get caught up in that. If our culture is rushing this direction, there's a chance that we as Christians will have our attitudes, our opinions, our standards, and our principles affected. As we say, well, if everybody else is treating it this way, if this is how money works in this country, perhaps it's not really that important after all. Perhaps we can deal with it in the same way. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, where did it really start? Did it start with individuals? Is it individuals in the country cause this problem, or is it our leadership? Did the leadership cause it? Which one is it? Is the leadership just a reflection of who we are, or are we a reflection of who they are? And I would say both. I would say that when leaders walk off a cliff, they set a bad example for us. And even if we knew better before, we tend to follow them. We tend to make the same decisions. Hey, if the leader's going, we're going. And we influence them. When we're careless with our money, when we spend like there's no tomorrow, then we tell our leaders, that's what we expect from you. So this morning, I don't really set out to say, well, here's where it started. We need to go back to that point. But the goal this morning is, how do we fix it? How do we avoid walking off a cliff or jumping off a cliff because that's what everybody else is doing? How do we learn, and what should our approach be to handling wealth and handling our agreements with people that we borrowed from, so that we can please God, so that we can do what's right. All of this leads to an irreverent attitude, a devil-may-care attitude towards wealth and debt. Whether it was the government, whether it was the individual that brought it about, the result is the same, that we don't look at things the way that we should. I want to define a term here, just so that we're clear about it. For the sake of our discussion this morning, when I use the term wealth, this is what I mean. I don't mean you have a big, huge pile of it. I just mean you have something. Items of intrinsic value recognized by peoples and societies, whether it's money, property, capital, means, dough, moolah, stuff, etc. Regardless of what it is, that's what we're talking about. Wealth, the things that have been entrusted to you, the things that you have earned or been given. I think it's important to talk about property rights when we discuss this topic. And you may be thinking, well, this sounds awfully secular, but it's not. And it's important. When they're degraded, when we lose our concept of property rights, when we lose our concept of who owns things, who does wealth belong to, our sense of responsibility to others goes down the tubes as well. When we say, well, I'm not really taking it from somebody. I'm not really defrauding a person. It's more like an entity. It's more like some guy that can just spare this anyways. We dehumanize or we objectify the person that owns the wealth, and it's a lot easier to do wrong with it, a lot easier to take it and not worry about paying it back. Well, Psalm chapter 24, verse 1, it says very plainly, the earth is the Lord's and all its fullness, the world and those that dwell therein. Well, I think it's pretty clear from that passage and from that concept where property rights originate. Everything belongs to God. There's nothing out there that's on this earth that doesn't belong to Him, that's not His originally. Matthew chapter 25, some people call this the parable of the talents. And it says here that the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. Then there's took out a big chunk there. And after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. This is the idea of this rich man spreading his wealth out among stewards, among people that could be entrusted with his goods. And when he came back, he settled those accounts. He said, it's time to pay up. It's time to give me back what is ours. And I hope we understand that God has, first of all, is the owner of everything. And that wealth is not evil. It's not something that's wrong to have. But God shares his wealth. He shares his stuff, his property with temporary owners, with stewards. That's us. And that's the people around us. And those stewards are answerable to God. So if I steal from somebody, I'm stealing from God. If I don't pay back somebody, I'm compromising that man's ability to be a good steward of what he's been entrusted with before God. If we think of it in those terms, it really clarifies things. I don't want to steal from God. I want to be honest with God. I want to pay God back. I don't want to compromise somebody else's relationship with God. I want them to be on a level standing field, good standing with God. Interaction with wealth is necessary. It's a necessary part of our lives. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, for even when we were with you, we command you to do this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. And I think we understand that in our world that we have to get a job in order to get the things that we need, to buy clothing, to buy shelter, to buy food. It's necessary from the God-given structure of life that we interact with wealth, with money. 1 Timothy is along the same vein of thought. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Again, we have to interact with wealth in this world. Don't say wealth is evil. I'm gonna disregard it. I won't own anything at all. Well, we've got to provide for ourselves. Money is intended to be a tool. It's intended to be something that we use, but like a good steward, that we use wisely, we use carefully, and we use with responsibility. Love of money is a problem, I think, that often comes to mind. We typically think, well, there's the problem. People love money, and that's where it all starts. And maybe it is. But I want to talk about this morning that it's not the only problem. 1 Timothy 6:10, there it is. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, from which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Well, the consequences of that sound terrible. We don't want to get wrapped up in money. We don't want it to become our God, because it will destroy us. But I would suggest to you that there are other ways, other than just loving money, that can destroy us with regard to wealth and money. Proverbs 21, verse 20. There is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it. You see, I love the way Proverbs talks. Very cut and dry, very simple. He says, foolish people take what they have and they waste it. And then they don't have anything. And then they have to go looking for some from somewhere else. They have to go looking for other avenues, whether they're going to steal it, whether they're going to borrow it. They don't have enough because they've wasted what they were given. So I'd say the first principle we need to understand there is be good stewards of what we've been given. Use it wisely. Use it carefully. Don't use more than we have. Isaiah chapter 30, verse 1. Woe to the rebellious children, says the Lord, who take counsel, but not of me, and who devise plans, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin. Now this passage is not speaking specifically of money or of wealth, but the idea is still there. Where do we get our advice from money? Do we take our advice, do we take our cues from our leadership in this country? Do we take our cues from investment advisors? Or do we take our cues and our instruction from God? The result's the same, whether we're talking about this sin or that sin. If we get bad advice about money, and we spend it and we do wrong with it, we're going to disappoint God and we're going to destroy ourselves. So this is a big deal. If we're foolish and neglect God's instructions for wealth, we will absolutely sin with regard to money. It's just as real as the sin of adultery. It's just as real as the sin of murder. It's just as real as stealing when we don't use our money the way that God would have us to use it. So we need to consider God's plan. We need to hear His advice on this matter. And money is a horrible master. We said just a few moments ago that money is intended to be a tool. And that's right. That's what God gave it to us to be. That's what wealth is here for. But when it becomes our master, it twists us and it perverts us, and we do all types of things that we don't want to do, that we would have never chosen to do if we'd gotten by ourselves, if we thought quietly, we wouldn't have made those decisions. But once money is placed in charge, it's a horrible taskmaster. Truth in lending. I don't know if you've ever closed a loan here, but there's a page in those 10,000 documents you get called the Truth in Lending page, and it tells you basically what your lender can do to you. Well, I want to talk about truth in lending and borrowing, because I think there's a few pages in the Bible, in the contract we've got with God, that describe both what the borrower should do and what the lender should do, and our responsibilities. And I'll just tell you before we get into it, it doesn't all sound good. It's not all pleasant to hear. Some of it goes against what we think as Americans. Some of it goes against what we call freedom and our inherent rights, what we believe them to be. Proverbs 22, verse 7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Ouch. That hurts. That means if I borrow money from somebody else, they own me in a sense. In a very real sense, they own me. I can no longer do anything I want to do. I have to fulfill my debt to them. I have to pay them back for the sake of my own integrity before God, not to mention the law of the land. I've got to pay that person back. And I've got to allocate my funds in a way that suits that purpose rather than what just I might like to do or want to do with it. And that's hard. That's hard to swallow. But we need to know that going in. Proverbs 17, 18. A man devoid of understanding shakes hands in a pledge and becomes surety for his friend. I think the idea of this passage is unsecured debt. It is where you agree that you're like, my friend can't pay back, I will. You know, he doesn't have collateral to turn in and say, well, here, I can't pay for this. Take your object back. So I stand in that place. God says that's foolish. It's foolish for us to be that person or to make those types of agreements where if everything goes bad, I can't pay you back. I can't even give you something that will settle the debt. It's just on me until I can work and pay every cent off. Matthew 18. It says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. You may think of this as the parable of the unforgiving servant. For the sake of our discussion today, we'll consider it the parable of the guy who owed somebody some money. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. But as he was not able to pay his master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and that payment be made. The servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the master of that servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him the debt. Now, I'm not reading this because this is an explanation of how it's always going to go for everyone, that every master out there is somehow going to be compassionate and forgive us. What I want us to understand from that is look at the servant's perspective. He understands the situation he's in. He understands the dire straits, that this is unavoidable, that he must pay this back. And he understands that if it's going to get fixed, it's going to get fixed by him. And he goes to his master, and he tries to make an agreement with him, says, "Master, please, just give me more time." He initiates a discussion and says, "I haven't paid you back yet. I owe you this." He takes responsibility for it, and he tries to make a plan to do so. Fortunately for him, he had a compassionate master who forgave him. But what if we don't? Can we just say, "Well, you know what? If you're not gonna deal with me, just forget about it. I'll just be gone. You'll never find me again." That's what a lot of people do in our country. They run from debt. They hide from debt. They try to become someone else or hide somewhere where it can't find them. But that's not what God says our duty is. Our duty is to pay back those that we borrowed from. Ecclesiastes 5, chapter 5, verses 4 through 6. "When you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. Better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin." And this is an idea of an agreement between you and God, but isn't that what we're talking about? If I borrow from Billy and I say, "Billy, I'm going to pay you back the $100 in a month," haven't I made an agreement not just between me and Billy, but also between me and God? And you see, Solomon says here, look, if you can't pay it back, if you're not going to pay it back, if you recognize you don't have it within yourself to do it, then don't vow. Don't make the agreement. Just deal with what you've got. Use what's at your disposal. Don't go out looking for something somewhere else. The proper focus for life, dealing with wealth. This is where it's really at here. How do we need to look at money? How do we need to look at wealth? How do we need to look at borrowing? Well, Proverbs 16, verse 3 says, "Commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts will be established." See, the idea is that we go to God first. We start from that being our point of reference, that everything we do has to flow down from that. What does God want me to do in life? What does God say I really need in life? Do I need this thing? What would God's judgment on this matter be? We've got to start with Him. And everything that flows from that premise will be an accurate and a good thought, will be established. Proverbs 28:20. "A faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who hastens to be rich will not go unpunished." See, there's a scale there in that verse, isn't it? What's the most important thing in your life? Is it your faith, your relationship with God, your integrity, your good name? Or is it to enrich yourself? And your life will follow suit. Whatever your priority is, your life will follow that priority. Do I seek God first? Is He my first priority? Or do I want to be rich? Do I want to be important? Do I want to be powerful? It's clear that we need to go with God first, and we'll have enough to get by. Proverbs 22, verse 1. "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold." How many people in our culture, in our country today, do you think believe that? You know, the most important thing, the most valuable thing out there is a good name. People change their names today. People become someone else when things get too hot for that identity. But this is what God says matters, because God knows your name, because God knows who you are. There's no shifting of your identity, no changing of who you are before God. He knows what you vowed to do. He knows what loans you've taken out. He knows who you owe and what you haven't paid for. A good name is the most important thing on this earth. Psalm 62:10. "Do not trust in oppression, nor vainly hope in robbery. If riches increase, do not set your heart on them." Well, look at the first part of that. That's pretty strong advice. Don't trust in oppression. Some people make their living by oppressing others. Some people make their living by dishonest gain. Some salesmen, it's all about what they can say to close the sale. Doesn't matter if they are treacherous, if they lie to you, if they overpromise. Some people are willing to compromise everything in order to make money. But here we have advice from God. Don't trust in oppression, nor vainly hope in robbery. Don't set that as your method for gaining income, because it's not going to work in the long run. There's plenty of rich people that have made money by being dishonest, but it's going to fall down. It's going to fail them. They're going to answer to God for it. Proverbs 23, verses 4 through 5. Do not overwork to be rich. Because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. Someone else has them when you're gone. Just think about that. How much of our time do we need to spend in gainful employment? And how much of our time do we need to spend in our service to God? Not to say that the two are somehow mutually exclusive of one another. Not to say that they don't overlap, because they certainly can. But just think about it. Sometimes we talk about need. We use the word need, and it's completely the wrong word for the occasion. We say, I need this. I need a bigger TV. I need cable. I need this house. I need this amount of cars. And what are we giving up for that? Do we give up the time that we ought to spend with our children, raising them to be godly children, because we need things? Do we give up the time that we could spend in service to God and teaching people about the gospel, because after all, I've got this big job, this big income I have to maintain? I'm not saying work's wrong. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying we don't have to put a certain amount of time in, but what I am saying is that we will answer for that balance. If we err on the wrong side, we'll answer for it. We've got to be sure that we're who we are before God, who He wants us to be first, and then use your extra time to work. Matthew chapter 6, verse 21. This is a passage we read often. We talk about a lot here. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You see, that's really what it's about. It's about, what do I trust in this life? Do I trust in the words in a book written by an invisible God whom I've never seen or laid hands on? Or do I trust in the things that I can touch in this world? Do I trust in the tangibles? Do I trust in the things that I eat and make me feel good? The things that I go watch a movie and I go do this and that and I feel good about it, and it's instant and it's right now. Which one of those do you treasure? And I can tell you, it takes work. It takes concerted effort to place emphasis on God. It takes work and concerted effort to make Him our priority above all these things that scream at us every day. Because God doesn't scream at us. God doesn't shout at us. He just speaks quietly from His pages. Where's your treasure? Another bit of advice from the Scripture. Live paid up. That's hard to do today. It's hard to do. Proverbs 6, verses 1 through 5. It says, my son, if you become surety for your friend, if you have shaken hands and pledged for a stranger, you are snared by the words of your mouth. You are taken by the words of your mouth. And here we are talking about the same thing again, an agreement. If an agreement has been made, it must be fulfilled. If an agreement has been made to pay someone back, we've got to pay it back. It doesn't matter what bankruptcy law tells us we can do. It doesn't matter what we think is right in our own sight. We've got to pay them back. Unless they're like that master that forgives us. When we talk to them, they say, look, don't worry about it. We've got to fulfill our pledge. So do this, my son, and deliver yourself. For you have come into the hand of your friend. Go and humble yourself. Plead with your friend. Give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver you like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, and like a bird from the hand of a fowler. It's interesting that he lists life and death situations there, isn't it? See, if the gazelle doesn't get away, he dies. And if the bird doesn't get away, he's slaughtered. And he says, if you don't fulfill your obligations, if you don't find a righteous way out of this, you're going to wind up like them. You're going to wind up snared and trapped. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 27 to 28. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it is in the power of your hand to do so. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it. When you have it with you, just think about that. How many times is it more convenient to do something else with our money than what we know we ought to do with it? It's so much easier to go do something that's fun than it is to look at that bank statement and pay the things that I owe. But he says right there, very plainly, don't withhold good things that you owe. And how many of us look at debt that way? How many of us look at the satisfying of a debt that we owe as a good thing? You know, get out the check and say, this is good to stroke this check, which means I don't get to have as much leisure money so that I can pay this guy back that I owe. That's exactly what God is telling us. It's good to pay off your debt. It's good to be out of that obligation. Romans 13, this is in the context of rendering our taxes and our obligations to the government. But the principle certainly applies here. He says, owe no one anything except the law of one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. I think the point there is that there are some obligations you can pay off more readily than others. You can pay off your monetary debts. But there are some debts that endure. Our lifelong debt, our lifelong obligation is to love each other. That's the ongoing open account we need to keep. That's the one thing we need to be continually paying into. Get the others paid off so that we can focus on what really matters in life. Consider righteousness before you do anything. I asked my class today, I said, have you ever noticed this about yourself? That when you act impulsively, you don't make good decisions. So, but when you sit and you collect information and you gather all the facts and then you take a moment or perhaps days or weeks to consider those facts and look at them and say, what is really the best course of action? That you make far better decisions. That's who we are as humans. And it's even better when we appeal to a righteous standard. When we look at God's standard and say, God, what should I do? Where should I go with this? Proverbs 14:29, he who is slow to wrath has great understanding. But he who is impulsive exalts folly. You know, I don't want to ask for a show of hands because my hand would go up too. But how many of us here have made an impulsive decision with our money that we regretted very shortly afterwards? We get mad. We get excited. We get overjoyed. And there goes the money. We've got to use our understanding. We've got to slow it down just a bit. Credit is so accessible. Debt is so easily reached right at our fingertips. People actually call you and say, hey, would you like to have some debt? And sometimes we say, yeah, because I could do some really fun stuff with that. But we can't be impulsive. Proverbs 21:5, the plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. But those of everyone who is hasty, surely to poverty. I wish God would give us some guidance on money, you know? The problem is we don't want to hear it. That's the problem our country has. That's the problem we have as individuals. We'd rather get ourselves obligated and be all tied up and bound up in debt before we take a moment to consider and look and say, hey, what's the right course of action here? God says plan. God says plan and be diligent and you'll have what you need. We will have plenty. Plenty just means more than you need. For those of everyone who is hasty, surely to poverty. Luke 14:28-30. For which of you intending to build a tower, and this is from the mouth of Jesus here, intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it, lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. That's pretty strong advice from Jesus too. Hey, think before you act. Think before you jump out there and get yourself obligated. Think before you invest in this thing. Ask yourself if it's even worthwhile. Ask yourself if it's even righteous. Ask yourself if you're going to have to compromise who you are. If you're going to have to compromise your integrity before God in order to do this or to finish it. We need to think before we act. We reach much better conclusions. So often our spiritual problems become our money problems and vice versa. Our money problems become our spiritual problems. But you see, if we're short-sighted in life, we're going to be short-sighted with our money. And then when we run out of money, then we're going to have all other sorts of problems. When we've got more people asking for money than we can pay back, we're going to have to compromise something, or we're going to feel pressure to do something we don't want to do. God doesn't want us in that situation. Satan does. That's exactly where Satan wants us. If he can't get you through some other avenue, money is good enough for him. He'll take you down however he can get you down. James chapter 4, verse 1 through 3. Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? Yes. You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. And you do not you ask and do not receive because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. See, I think America has a pleasure problem. America has an instant gratification problem. We want it now. And we're willing to take down whatever gets in our way to get to it at times. And we've got to be careful that we don't let Satan exploit our culture to bring us down to his level, to bring us down to hell with him. Integrity. Integrity is a word that is almost forgotten in some places in this world and in this country. What does integrity mean anyways? What's it all about? Who cares about integrity? Well, God does. Proverbs 11:1. Dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. You see, it's so easy to skim. It's so easy to take just a little bit more than what we're owed. It's so easy to give just a little bit less than what we ought to. That's what God's talking about here. When our system of measurement, when our system of evaluation is flawed, it's despicable to God. He's ashamed of it. God loves and he delights in this idea of just measurements, just estimations, correct judgments. And so where do we want to be? Where do we want to be? Exodus 22. A couple of interesting stories here I want to look at in the Old Testament briefly. Exodus 22:14. This idea says if a man borrows anything from his neighbor, and it becomes injured or dies, and the owner of it not being with it, he shall surely make it good. Well, what a foreign concept. You know, hey man, that thing I borrowed from you broke. I guess you're going to have to get another one. You know, this harkens back to a time when people at least understood that there's an obligation on my part if I borrow something from you. If you lend to me, then this thing is entrusted. It's not mine. It's yours. And I've got to treat it not like I might treat my own, but I've got to treat it like it belongs to you and like I'm going to answer if I don't return it. You see, that's the heart of what we should be as people. It's the heart of how we should look at each other, that you own this because God has given this to you for a time. And if I lose it or destroy it, I need to pay you back because you owe it to God. 2 Kings chapter 6, verses 4 through 5. The children of Israel want to go cut some wood. They ask the prophet if they can. It says, and when they came to Jordan, they cut down trees. But as one was cutting down a tree, the iron axe head fell into the water. And he cried out and said, alas, master, for that was a borrowed axe. I mean, look at the lament there over an axe. Look at the integrity of his spirit over an axe head. He knows that he's going to have to go back to his neighbor. And he's going to have to make this right. What am I going to do? The water is too deep. I have to retrieve it somehow. I've got to pay him back somehow. It's going to cost me. That sense of obligation that I borrowed this from you, and in order for me to have integrity before God, I have to pay you back. I must make this right. That's what we need as Christians today. That's what we need as Americans. That's what our country needs. That when I borrow, I've got to pay it back. It worked out for this guy. Fortunately, he had a profit. But we don't. Psalm 37:21, the wicked borrows and does not repay, but the righteous shows mercy and gives. See, that says something about the attitude of our country, doesn't it? The wicked borrows and does not repay. He borrows and he says, you know what, you owed this to me anyways, because you shouldn't have had it, and you probably did something wrong to get it to begin with, so after all, I'm just setting things right. I'm like Robin Hood. You know, I'm taking from you because you don't need this. The Bible says that's a wicked way of looking at things. We don't have the right to feel entitled to other people's things. We don't have the right to feel entitled to God's things. And it all comes back to property rights. God owns it. He's loaned it to us. And I can't just take it without answering for it. Romans 12:17. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. Well, if we're not supposed to repay evil for evil, then I suppose it's accurate to say we shouldn't repay good deeds with evil either. If someone gives to me, I've got to pay him back. If it's good in the sight of God to pay back a debt, then I've got to pay it back. If it's good in the sight of the man that I owe money to that I agreed to pay back, then I've got to pay him back. I've got to do what's right in the sight of God and what's expected of me lawfully on this earth. Dealing with wealth in a careless world requires integrity. See, it's not just enough to talk about it, and it's not just enough to read about it, but we have to make it a part of who we are. We have to take these thoughts from God, and make them our thoughts. And we have to control ourselves with those principles, with those ideas. And we've got to be self-controlled and say, you know what? If I'm not willing to pay this back, then I don't need it. If I don't have the ability to satisfy this debt, then I ought not take it out. We need to work in an honest occupation. There are so many things we can do in this country. You know, it's one of those things that the sky is the limit as far as opportunity in this nation. We're unique in that regard. But that doesn't mean that all of those opportunities are good opportunities for us. Just because it pays the bills, just because it can give me food and clothing, doesn't mean that it's a good thing. We need to hold up our occupation against God's standard and say, is this ethical? Is this righteous? Is this noble? Does God approve of this? And if the answer is no to any of those questions, then we need to find something else to do. If we take advantage of people in our occupation, we need to find something else to do. Because even if they don't see it, God sees it. We need to work with honesty and integrity, rendering service that we've agreed upon. We've got a little philosophy in my world. We say 8 hours work for 8 hours pay. It's just a simple idea that when you're at work, you work. You do what you're paid to do. It's not time for Facebook. It's not time for social networking of any sort. It's not time for goofing off. It's not time for things that you would do at home, and if you just have some free time at work, so you're going to do it. It's time to work. Integrity demands it. But see, I think it's become commonplace in this world to think of our employer as somebody who's got more than he needs. And as such, it's my place to help even that out a little bit. And so if I steal from my employer, no big deal, because he's got it to spare. Well, that idea and that concept, that way of thinking, it doesn't jive with God's opinion. See, God says we have to live and work with integrity, and we have to fulfill our agreements. And when we go to work, we have an agreement with that person. We say, I will do what you've asked me to do for the pay that you've agreed to pay me. And if we don't do that, we're lying and we're stealing. Borrow and pay back with honesty and integrity, fulfilling your obligations on time. That's what God wants us to do. If we're going to borrow, if we must borrow, borrow carefully, borrow only after consideration. I would advise you to borrow something that is secured, so that if you can't pay it back, you can give it back. But do it with honesty. And pay the person back with honesty. And be upright and be truthful about it. And if you have the money, use it for what you said you would use it for. Don't use it to spend on yourself, goofing off, having fun, taking vacations when you owe someone else that money. Never let money be your master. You see, God is a much better master. He's a much better king than money can ever be. Because money has no soul. Money has no thoughts of its own. Money only reflects the intents and the purposes of our own heart. So when we make money our master, what we're really doing is serving our own pleasures and our own desires. And we've wiped God out of the picture. Never let money be your master. Never compromise right principles to get money. You may get money for a time, but you'll pay for it dearly in the long run. Even if it does last during this life, which often it doesn't, we could call out dozens of names in our recent history where their ivory tower has toppled down because it was built upon falsehood and it was built upon lies. Even if it endures through this life, we'll stand before God, and He has much more accurate books than we do. Never compromise right principles to keep money. It's not worth compromising your integrity so that you can have more stuff. Absolutely not worth it at all. We need to serve God, and we need to do it at all costs. Never let money be your treasure. Seems like we've come full circle. We look at what America treasures, and we look at what God treasures. Hopefully we can see those two next to each other after this discussion. That America treasures vanity. It treasures things that are passing away. It treasures stuff for the sake of having stuff. Our treasure needs to be a satisfied Father, a satisfied God in heaven, a God who will accept this and say, good job, you did exactly what I wanted you to do. You made it through the fire. And this life is a fire, and this culture is a fire, and the money that we have to deal with here is just one more means of trying us. So I ask you to consider, do you plan on succeeding in this life monetarily, or do you plan on succeeding this life spiritually, or do you plan on doing both? I'm convinced you can do both. If we put God first, we can succeed on all fronts.